Okay, pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call Human Services Finance and Policy Committee to order. Good morning, everyone. We have a busy week ahead of us. First, I want to take the roll call, and I know we have some members that are excused and could be in other committee hearings today and at different times this week. So I think we now have Ms. Hansen with us. Would you take the roll, please? Ms. Hansen, we can't hear you. Could you take the roll?
1 second.
Okay, we'll come back to Ms. Hansen when her audio is working. I'll just give you the layout for this week. Today, we are going to simply have an overview of the Human Services, Finance, and Omnibus Bill, and we won't take any action. I'll just move the bill before the committee and get an overview from our House research staff, and then have Commissioner Harpstead provide some remarks at the end of today. We have a hard stop at noon because we have session. Tomorrow, we will take public testimony on the bill. We'll be meeting at 10:30. Amendments are due Wednesday by 5 p.m., and then Thursday and Friday, we'll do amendments markup to the bill. And so we'll take action on the amendments on Thursday and on Friday, and then final action on the omnibus bill. Then the bill will be merged with the health finance omnibus bill and the bill from early childhood in Ways and Means. So there'll be three omnibus bills combined. We have one appropriations article for both the health and the human services finance and omnibus bill. So when you offer amendments, please make sure they're in the jurisdiction of human services. And when we go through the bill today, if you have any clarifying questions or technical questions, please make sure they are directed towards the human services piece of this bill and the appropriations articles. Okay, let's see if Ms. Hansen is ready to take roll. Ms. Hansen, are you with us? Looks like her audio is still not working, so we'll give that a few more minutes. I just want to thank all of our staff, our nonpartisan House research staff. They have been working nonstop and putting together our omnibus bills, and so they have a true dedication and commitment to working for the state and helping us govern the state and allocate our budget and resources to help as many people as we can throughout the state. So I want to thank the House research staff, the nonpartisan staff, the fiscal staff, all of our committee staff for working, not just in this committee, but in the health committee and in our divisions. So thank you so much. And many of them will be going through the overview of the bill today. So with that, I just want to remind members that the budget target was a combined budget target with health and human services of $346.510 million, and the TAILS target was $299.2 million. So there were a lot of great bills we heard. Unfortunately, with limited resources, we couldn't include all of the bills we heard in our omnibus. Okay, let's see if Ms. Hansen. Ms. Hansen, is your audio working yet? If not, could Yingya Vang take the roll?
Yep, give me 1 second. Okay. Chair Schultz?
Present.
Vice Chair Bonner?
Present.
Lead Albright?
He's excused.
Oh, that's correct. Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Burkle.
Present.
Representative Fisher.
Fisher, present.
Representative Frederick.
Present.
Representative Hansen.
Present.
Representative Kuehl. Representative Liebling.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Knorr.
Present.
Representative Novotny.
Present.
Representative Pearson.
Pearson, present.
Representative Pinto.
Present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, present.
Representative Robbins.
Present.
Representative Sandel.
Present.
And Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Ms. Fang. We have a quorum. Let's see, Vice Chair Bonner, would you like to move the minutes for March 26th?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the minutes for March 26, 2021.
Thank you. Representative Bonner moves the minutes for March 26th. Is there any discussion or corrections to the minutes? Representative Robbins?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not to the minutes, but I just want to let you know that Representative Keel texted me, and she's having internet troubles, but she is trying to attend.
Okay, we'll note her when she's present. Thank you, Representative Robbins. Seeing no discussion or corrections, all those who, those who approve the minutes, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the minutes from March 26th. The motion prevails, and the minutes from March 26th, 2021 are approved. Great. So members, I'm going to move House File 2127, so it's before us. And there is a DE1, which we'll move later. We'll get an overview of the DE amendment, and that will become the Human Services Omnibus Bill. Are there any questions before we start on the schedule this week, or any questions from members? I'm not seeing any. So the first presentation will be done. First I want to make a few comments. I know we don't have a lot of time with a hard stop at noon about highlights in the bill, and then we'll go over through the technical piece with our House nonpartisan research staff. So there is a lot of great things in the Human Services bill, and we try to get as many members' bills in as possible. A few of the items that are in the bill are the one priority for me was increasing the PCA rates and wages for our PCA workers across the state. So we're dedicating a significant amount of our target to doing that. We have the increases for the MFIP cost of living adjustment and the base, one-time base increase, one-time increase, sorry. We have the SNAP income limit increase to 200%. We have the package to address homelessness coming out of Chair Gomez's committee. We have a lot of work that was done on behavioral health and substance abuse by Chair Fisher and his team. We have a lot of the work in behavioral health and the Waiver Reimagine work. We have funding for the ICWA training. So remember, we both want to address equity and poverty, and I think the Human Services bill does that through the economic assistance packages, the packages around homelessness, and the policy bills and the budget bills in behavioral health. And remember, this will be combined with the health finance bill that also does a lot of work to address economic assistance and poverty and equity issues as well. Okay, with that, our first presenter is Ms. Pugnelli. Ms. Pugnelli, good morning, and please start your presentation. Oh, I'm sorry, there's some questions. Representative Pearson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and we're just reviewing the bill here as thoroughly as we can with as much time as we got it in. I was wondering if we could get nonpartisan staff to go through any provisions that pertain to bills or provisions that did not actually previously come before this committee.
We will definitely highlight anything new language or that we didn't hear in this committee. So when they go through the overview, they will highlight those provisions. Any follow-up, Representative Pearson?
No, thanks, Madam Chair.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned that the Human Services, the Health and Health Finance, and the Early Childhood Finance would be rolled into a single bill for Ways and Means. Does that mean that all three of those omnibus bills will be heard as one on the House floor?
Thank you, Representative Sandell. And that is my understanding, is that it'll come as one bill to the floor of the House and then get moved into conference committee with the Senate.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm not seeing any more questions, but feel free if you have a technical or clarifying question just to raise your hand and we will pause the presentations and take your questions. So Ms. Pinelli, again, thank you for all the work you've done so far on this bill, and I know there's a lot of more work to do as we bring amendments forward. So please start your overview, Ms. Pinelli.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the overview this morning, those of us in House Research are going to be working off of the listing of bills in House File 2127 that was posted for the meeting. And I will be going through Article 1 right now, which is the Economic Supports article. This article contains several sections. Sections 1 to 3, 10, 12 to 14, 16, 17, 19, 20, 24, 25, 29, 30, 34 to 36, 38 to 41, and Section 44, Paragraph B, that are all related to the governor's economic assistance cash program uniformity proposal. This proposal is aligning policies for the cash assistance programs with the federal SNAP program. It simplifies administration of these programs. It provides for six-month reporting instead of the current monthly reporting. It switches the MFIP and the GA programs from a retrospective budgeting to six-month prospective budgeting. Some of these sections also include some additional language that are related to other governors' proposals, sections 19, 24, 35, and 38 contain language that relates to the governor's proposal to clarify public assistance statutes. And section 38 also contains language related to the governor's proposal that exempts high school student unemployment benefits from income determinations for the economic assistance programs. Sections 4 to 8 and Section 44, Paragraph A, are related to the governor's proposal to align the SNAP employment and training policy with federal law. Section 9 is from House File 611. It's Representative Knorr's bill that increases the SNAP gross income eligibility level from 165% of the federal poverty guidelines to 200% of the federal poverty guidelines. Section 11 is another section from the governor's bill. This is allowing tribal governments to access food shelf funding. Sections 15, 18, 21, 26 to 28, 32, 33, 37 and 44 paragraph A are all related to the governor's proposal clarifying public assistance statutes, which removes contradictions between the MFIP statutes and the statutes that govern economic assistance eligibility and verification. Section 22 contains the governor's proposal to provide an annual MFIP cost of living adjustment on October 1st of each year, which aligns with when the SNAP benefits are also adjusted each year. Section 23 is from Representative Stevenson's bill, House File 713, which relates to MFIP household report forms, and it's allowing counties to call an applicant if they have information that was left off of their paperwork. Section 31 is from the governor's proposal. It's allowing tribal governments administering MFIP to have access to the MFIP Consolidated Fund for Emergency Services. Section 42 is from the governor's proposal. This is part of the returning from COVID emergency measures proposal. And this extends some of those emergency measures. The two that are included here are not counting federal emergency relief funds as income for the cash assistance programs and waiving interviews for cash assistance programs under certain circumstances. And then section 43 is from Representative Cagle's bill, House File 1382, which requires a long-term homelessness supportive services report. And that is everything that's in Article 1, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Pinelli. Are there any questions related to Article 1 from members? Okay, I'm not seeing any questions from members. Next, we have Ms. Sunderman, who's going to walk through the next piece, the next article in the omnibus. Again, thank you, Ms. Sunderman, for all of the hours you've put it towards our omnibus bills. We really appreciate it.
Right, Madam Chair, members, I'll be going through Articles 2 through 5 and then handing it back over to Ms. Pinelli. And I suppose I'll pause after each article for questions.
And can you, Ms. Sunderman, can you get closer to your mic or speak up? Thank you.
So starting with Article 2, this is provisions related to child protection. Sections 1 through 4 are from the Governor's Human Services Omnibus Finance Bill. As it was amended in committee. And these four sections relate to the North Star Care for Children federal compliance pieces that were in the governor's bill. The remaining sections 5 through 20 of this article are from Representative Pinto's House File 1943. These sections add a non-caregiver sex trafficking assessment to the possible responses to a report of child maltreatment. They also add sex trafficking terminology to various child protection statutes and make several clarifying changes. That is it for Article 2. If there are any questions, or I can go on to Article 3.
Do members have any questions on Article 2? Not seeing anyone. Any questions? Please proceed, Ms. Sunderman.
Moving on to Article 3, this is the Child Protection Policy article. Sections 1 through 31 and sections 35 and 36 are all from House File 1340, the second engrossment as amended, which will shortly be the third engrossment. That was Representative Knorr's bill. This is a DHS policy bill relating to Family First Prevention Services Act updates. These sections modify a range of statutes related to child placement in qualified residential treatment programs, transitions to adulthood provisions, and voluntary foster care for treatment provisions in Chapter 260D. These sections also create certification process for qualified residential treatment programs and other children's residential settings. Section 32 of this article is House File 310, the first engrossment. This was Representative Becker Finn's bill that expands individuals who are required to report known or suspected child maltreatment. Section 33 is House File 1026 as amended. This was Representative Morrison's bill that removes prenatal substance use reporting requirements for certain health professionals providing prenatal, postpartum, and other healthcare services to women and infants. And finally, Section 34 is from House File 60, as amended by a DE amendment in committee. This is Representative Cagle's bill. And this was the bill related to parent notification of contested case hearings for appeals of child maltreatment determinations. The bill allows parents the right to file a written statement and to attend and participate in the contested case hearing. That concludes Article 3.
Thank you, Ms. Sunderman. Are there any questions from members on Article 3? Okay, Ms. Sunderman, is it now you're turning it over to Ms. Punnelli?
No, Madam Chair, okay, I'll be doing Articles 4 and 5 as
Sorry.
Well.
Sorry, go ahead and proceed, thank you.
Article 4 has provisions related to behavioral health. So sections 1 through 15, 19, 20, 46, 51, and 52 are all from House File 970, the first engrossment, as amended in committee. These provisions are Representative Vang's bill related to mental health workforce and professional cultural competency. It includes provisions expanding insurance coverage of mental health services provided by clinical trainees, adding alcohol and drug counselors to the health professional loan forgiveness program. It also increases the cultural and geographic diversity of the mental health professional licensing boards, adds continuing education requirements related to cultural responsiveness and cultural competency for mental health professionals licensed by boards. And it also creates the culturally informed and culturally responsive mental health task force. Sections 16 through 18 and 42 through 44 are from House File 944, the first division engrossment. This was Representative Hansen's bill. And this is provisions allowing for children's psychiatric residential treatment direct referrals. Sections 21 through 23, 32, 54, and 55 are from Representative Bierman's bill, House File 1390, the first engrossment. These are the certified community behavioral health clinic provision modifications related to the to match the language from the state plan that was recently submitted. Sections 24 and 25, 27 and 47 are from House File 722, the first division engrossment as amended. This was Representative Thompson's bill related to culturally specific or culturally responsive and disability responsive substance use disorder treatment provider rate increases. This provides a 5% rate increase for these providers and modifies some definitions in Chapter 254B. Section 26 is from the Governor's Human Services Finance Bill. This eliminates certain substance use disorder treatment enhanced rates. Section 28 is new language that was not in a bill that we heard this year. This requires the Commissioner of Human Services to establish a substance use disorder community of practice. Sections 29 through 31 and Section 48 are from the Governor's Human Services Finance Bill. These are provisions modifying the Opiate Epidemic Response Advisory Council provisions and the fund as well. Section 33, 39 through 41, and 55 are all also from the Governor's Human Services Omnibus Finance Bill. These all relate to mental health case management payment, targeted case management services, and MA reimbursement for case management. This was part of the governor's overall case management reform package. Sections 34 through 38 are also from the governor's human services bill. These sections relate to the required enrollment for SUD treatment providers in the federal demonstration project. And In Section 34, there's new language that was not in the amendment or the bill. So section or paragraphs F and G are new language that the department requested that we add to the bill. Let's see. Section 45 is also new language. This section requires the commissioner to ensure that certain regions are held harmless, or their funding continues at current levels in the process of the commissioner's reform of the Adult Mental Health Initiative funding formula. Section 49 is from House File 287, the First Division Engrossment, and this was slightly amended as well. This is Representative Edelson's bill directing the commissioner to work with stakeholders to make recommendations related to sober housing programs. Section 50 is from Representative Frederick's bill, House File 2116, the First Division Engrossment. This is the bill regarding SUD treatment paperwork reduction. And Section 53 is new language. This is language requiring the commissioner to, conduct an analysis or contract with an entity to conduct an analysis about substance use disorder treatment rate restructuring.
Thank you, Ms. Sunderman. And so I'm just going to explain some of the new language. We had Chair Fisher work with March and other stakeholders to get to some agreement on the substance abuse treatment reform language that was in the governor's initial proposal. So they worked on some of that new language, which you can see in these various sections. And then the section on the regional adult mental health initiative, DHS currently is working on a funding formula, and I wanted to make sure that the chairs and leads in HHS are made aware of that new funding formula, and regions are held harmless until we can review that funding formula. So that's at some point in the future. So that's a policy language, and that is new language. Are there any questions from members on this article? Representative Sandel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, but I'm having trouble keeping up with the bill as Ms. Sunderland goes through it. Would it be possible for her to reference line numbers as she describes the individual sections? Or am I in the wrong place?
Well, there is a document that is on our committee website, and it's from Minnesota House Research, and it's the listing of the bills in each article for the sections, and then there's a description. There's the bill number, the bill author, and the description, and that's okay. What the House Research staff are walking through. They're not actually, they may not have the bill DE1 in front of them, so we're just doing an overview of the DE1.
Thank you, that's helpful.
Does that help? Okay, sorry that we didn't make that more clear, Representative Sandel.
Not my problem, thank you.
Okay, Ms. Sunderman, I'm not seeing any other questions from members. Do you want to proceed to the next article, which I believe is Article 5?
Yes, Madam Chair. Article 5, the direct care and treatment article, is only one section. And this is from the governor's human services bill. And it states that county payments for the cost of care at state-operated community-based behavioral health hospitals apply to care for both adults and children. And that concludes Article 5, and I will pass it back to Ms. Pinelli for Article 6.
Thank you, Ms. Sunderman. Are there any questions for Article 5? I'm not seeing any. Ms. Pinelli, please present Article 6 for the Disability Services and Continuing Care for Older Adults.
Right, Madam Chair, the next article is Article 6, Disability Services and Continuing Care for Older Adults. Section 1 of this article is a governor's proposal related to nursing facility reassessments and consumer improvements. This section is amending the section of statute that governs the assessments that need to be done to nursing home residents periodically that sets the case mix classification level for people. And this is just requiring an assessment to be done after someone is done using certain therapies or in a couple of other instances so that they're not still being billed for services that they aren't using anymore. Sections 2, 12, 14, and 30 are related to the governor's proposal on acuity-based customized living rates and closing the corporate foster care moratorium loophole. So this is modifying the corporate foster care moratorium loophole related to certain customized living settings for two of the disability waivers, the brain injury and the CADI waivers. And then it's also requiring acuity-based customized living rates to be established within the disability waiver rate system. And I believe it's also requiring that there be a moratorium on certain customized living settings being developed for the BI and the CADI waivers. Section 3 is from Representative Hansen's bill, House File 1102. This is related to home and community-based assessment requirements, modifying them for people who are temporarily entering an inpatient healthcare facility. Sections 4 to 6, 9 to 11, 32, and 33, paragraph B, are all related to the governor's proposal on Waiver Reimagined Phase 2, which is moving from 4 disability waivers to 2 disability waivers and also establishing individualized budget methodology. Sections 7 and 8 come from Representative Frederick's bill, House File 1754. This was the Continuing Care Technical Bill, and these sections are related to nursing facility and home and community-based services, consumer surveys, and then also directing the commissioner to develop surveys for assisted living residents. Sections 13 and 15 to 17 are a governor's proposal related to disability waiver rate system, rate reform for remote service provisions, so establishing rates for remote services under DWRS. Sections 13, 14, 18, and 27 are related to a governor's proposal creating family foster care rate tiers, customized living program integrity, and also repealing some obsolete grants. Sections 19 to 21 and 26 are from Representative Lippert's House File 663, which was his PCA payment rate reform bill, and the pieces that are in the omnibus bill are just related to the rate reform that was in his bill and not the program integrity. And this is a slightly modified version of what was amended in committee when we heard House File 663. There are some new implementation components that have been added as part of this proposal. Section 22 is from Representative Ryer's House File 780. This is related to housing support bed moratorium modifications. I believe this is for the Metro demonstration project. Sections 23 and 25 are a governor's proposal allowing tribes to access cost-neutral housing support allocations. Section 24 is from Representative Wolgamott's bill, House File 1822, and it's specifically just section 11 from that bill. And this is making certain temporary COVID-19 program modifications permanent. This section specifically relates to housing support and extending the absence policy for people who need to go into an inpatient healthcare setting for more than 18 days. Section 28 is from Representative Akam's bill, House File 1159. This is the temporary PCA compensation for services provided by a parent or a spouse. Sections 29 and 31 are from the governor's bill. This is related to the self-directed workforce contract ratification and rate increases for the self-directed workforce employees. Section 33, paragraph A, is related to a governor's proposal, and this is repealing obsolete grants. It's part of the governor's proposal realigning disability grants. And that concludes Article 6.
Okay. Any questions from members on Article 6? Okay, I'm not seeing any questions. Ms. Pinelli?
Madam Chair, Article 7 is the community supports policy article. All of the sections in this article come from the Department of Human Services Community Supports Policy Bill. Section 1 is making a clarifying change to intensive rehabilitative mental health services. And the remainder of that article, sections 2 to 26, are updating the statutes that govern the Community First Services and Supports Program.
Okay, any questions from members on Article 7? Okay, I'm not seeing any. Ms. Pinelli?
Madam Chair, I will turn it back over to Ms. Sunderman now.
Thank you, Ms. Pinelli. Ms. Sunderman.
Chair and members, I'll be going through Articles 8, 9, 10, 11, and I believe also Article 12. Starting with Article 8, this is the miscellaneous article. It contains one section, and it is House File 388 as amended by a DE1 amendment. This was Representative Knorr's bill. And this is the bill modifying provisions related to the Cultural and Ethnic Communities Leadership Council. It also extends the council, which is currently set to expire, I believe, in 2022. And it also adds a compensation provision for members of the council. That concludes Article 8. I can move on to Article 9.
Any questions, members, on Article 8? No questions. Please proceed, Ms. Sunderman.
Article 9 is the Mental Health Uniform Service Standards article. This in its entirety is from House File 1495, the First Division Engrossment as amended in committee. This was Chair Fisher's bill. It's the DHS Mental Health Uniform Service Standards, and it's Article 1 of that bill. It creates a new chapter 245I and aligns mental health, a system of mental health for licensing and service provision. And the goal is to align it, to standardize, and to make it a more unified system. And Articles 10 and 11 are also Articles 2 and 3 of House File 1495, the First Division Engrossment as amended. So Article 10 is the Crisis Response Services article. And again, it has the goal of unifying and aligning standards and requirements for mental health crisis response services. And Article 11 is a large article, but it is conforming changes related to the changes in Articles 9 and 10. That concludes 9, 10, and 11.
Okay, are there any questions from members on any of those articles? Okay, I'm not seeing any. Ms. Sunderman, last article.
Article 12 is the Governor's Human Services Finance Bill. Article 5, this is the DHS forecast adjustments. And Article 13 is the appropriations article. And that concludes the bill, the DE amendment.
Thank you, Ms. Sunderman. Are there any questions on the last article? I'm not seeing any. So next we'll have Mr. Berg go through the spreadsheet. Members, this is also posted on our committee website, and I believe we'll share the screen so members can follow along in the public on the spreadsheet. Mr. Berg, welcome, and thank you so much for all the hours. Have you slept at all, Mr. Berg?
Not recently, Madam Chair.
Okay, well, any mistakes, they're my mistakes, not yours, Mr. Berg. But thank you for all the work you've done. I know you've worked on various omnibus bills the last few weeks. Thank you for all the hours you're putting in, and I know it's not over with yet, but we really appreciate it, Mr. Berg. So please, I think we're going to share the screen, and yes. Then you want to walk through the spreadsheets. And I believe there, I don't know if you have the specific spreadsheet to human services. The one that I think was posted was highlighted in green. Is that correct?
That, Madam Chair, my understanding is Ms. Vang will share the full spreadsheet that represents this entire funding article, which is both committees. It is coded, and so I'll talk about this committee share of it, and later today, I think Ms. Vang will send out a version of this spreadsheet that cuts it down to just this committee's portion of it, and there will be a mirror image version of it for the Health Finance Policy Committee as well, but for now, we'll work off the total sheet.
Okay, great. We have about 30 minutes, Mr. Berg.
Okay. We'll see how far we get. We'll try to move fast. This is, of course, a lot of information. It's very hard to see on the screen. I'll make just a couple of general comments about the total spending. If you look at below where it says the House columns, which are the right-hand seven columns on this spreadsheet, and the other columns, the left-hand columns, are the governors for comparison. If you look at line 8 below where it says House, you'll see the difference from target is zero in both the 22-23 and 24-25 biennia. That shows that together this article spends, as the chair noted, $346.510 million above base net in 22-23, and $299.2 million above base in 24-25. For reference, this committee's portion of that $346 million is when you see the portion only for this committee, it spends $191.6 million above base in 22-23 and $245.9 million above base in 24-25. I'll note that there's no general fund spending in either bill for the House in 21. The governor did have some general fund spending in 21. In the House bills, it's all in 22 and 23, although this bill does have TANF spending in 24-25, and I'll come to that momentarily. And I'll pause just for a second, Madam Chair, if there are general questions before I move on to the specific items.
Okay, do members have any general questions about the budget target? And Mr. Berg, the numbers you mentioned just for this committee, are those on the spreadsheet?
Madam Chair, they are not on this version. This looks, again, at the whole funding article, which is the same for this bill as it is for Representative Liebling's bill that will be released this afternoon. I have worked on sheets that split this into what are here the green shaded items for this committee and the unshaded items for Representative Liebling's committee. I think we'll send those out after this, but okay, we're starting off just with the full amount.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Berg. I'm not seeing any questions, so please proceed. Right. And we'll pause in the middle to take a break.
Okay.
And see if there's questions.
I'll try to move through these items fairly rapidly. There are quite a few of them. The first item on line 108 is a governor's initiative that, on home and community-based equity evaluation, which this committee is not doing. This bill does not do. Moving on to line 115 is the governor's recommendation on the nursing facility reassessment, which is the House takes the governor's recommendation. On line 121 is the governor's recommendation on paid family medical leave, which we have the governor's recommendation, and I should note that there is only in this committee the only impact of that, and you will see on line 124, is that in fiscal 25, there is a $468,000 cost in the nursing home formula. The rest of the numbers you see here are handled as part of the paid family medical leave fund in the legislation that is going forward. And I'm not sure which omnibus bill is actually carrying that, but not in this one. If you, Ms. Fang, if you want to go to the next page or scroll down, yes. On line, moving down to line 142 is House File 388, the Cultural and Ethnic Leadership Council. It costs $54,000 in 22-23 and $84,000 in the tails. On line 148 is the governor's item on Family First Prevention Services Act implementation. And this bill takes the governor's recommendation that spends $1.3 million in 22-23 and $2.2 million in the tails to implement that law. On line 156 is the governor's item for North Star Care for Children federal requirement conformity, which spends $3.6 million in 22-23 and $18,000 in 24-25. Again, that's the governor's rec. On line 161, the House is taking the governor's recommendation on the ICWA training item, which spends $2 million in 22-23 and $2.1 million in the tails. Next page. And then on line 165 is the governor's item to address the error rate in the SNAP program. That costs $1.4 million in 22-23 and $1.3 million in the tails.
Hold on, Mr. Berg. We have the screen? Can Ms. Vang, can you scroll up on the spreadsheet? We're on line past 165.
Yes. One more down.
Went the wrong way. There you go.
There you go. It should be. There you go. That is it. And I will quickly pass over. There are some budget recommendation items in the governor's budget which do not have fiscal impact, but it's indicated here if they have hashtags in them, we are taking the language, and if they don't, we are not. So this bill takes the governor's recommendation to allow tribal governments to access the Minnesota Food Shelf Program. On line 174, this bill does not take the governor's recommendation to change the community action formula, grant formula. And on line 178, it does take the governor's recommendation on clarifying the public assistance statutes. All of those are no-cost items. Dropping down to, there's a governor's item, it's highlighted, but the governor dropped it in a supplemental budget. Line 183 is the allocating general fund, refinancing TANF expenditures, general fund expenditures with TANF expenditures, which is no longer a governor's recommendation. On line 189 is House File 611, which is changes the SNAP gross income limit. That has a cost of $10,000 in 22-23 and $4,000 in the tails. On line 193 is the governor's recommendation for cuts to the Minnesota Food Assistance Program. This bill does not take that item, so there is no change to the Minnesota Food Assistance Program. Next page. On line 198 is the governor's recommendation for the economic assistance cash program uniformity. This bill takes the governor's recommendation, which costs $1.9 million in 22-23 and 1.4 million general fund in 22-23 and 57.7 million general fund in 24-25. Again, a couple of no cost items on line 208 is the informationally really the governor's recommendations to change the unemployment insurance exemption for high school students. That has no cost, but is agreed with in this. I believe the language, of course, is in the economic development bill. Line 210 is the governor's recommendation to align the SNAP employment and training statute with federal requirement. Again, it has no cost. This bill takes that initiative. Line 213, this is the TANF. You'll see this is one of the few areas in fiscal 21. This is the one-time payment to MFIP recipients of up to $750 from TANF proceeds. You'll see that $24.2 million there, which is a TANF number, was also a governor's recommendation. Line 218 is the governor's recommendation for a COLA in the MFIP program. This bill takes the governor's recommendation at $5.2 million in 22-23 and at $14.9 million in the tails. Next page. For line, dropping down to line 239, this is the governor, this is kind of a technical item. This the governor refinances the emergency child care money that was passed in chapter 71 of 2020 and uses the remaining coronavirus relief funds to do it. You'll notice there's a difference. The governor refinanced $23.6 million. The House's number is the updated number of $26.6 million. That's the amount that is currently left in the Coronavirus Research Fund, Relief Fund. And by refinancing this, it makes no difference to the amount of emergency child care grants that go out, but it creates a $26.6 million savings in the general fund, which is part of how this committee gets to its target. On line 245 is the governor's recommendation on behavioral health grants reductions. The House takes the governor's recommendations on this with the exception that the House is not reducing the gambling grant in fiscal year 21 by $1 million, the compulsive gambling grant. I will note the Senate has a different financing method on this. While the reductions in general fund grants are in place, the Senate is tracking looks different because they backfill that. So the general fund saves the money, but the grants would be the same. Line 252 is the governor's item on case management redesign. The House bill takes the governor's recommendation at $612,000 in 22-23. Next page, please. On line 258 is House File 780, which changes the housing support bed moratorium. That has a cost of $3.1 million in 22-23 and $9.2 million in the tails. Line 264 is the governor's and House's, the House is taking the governor's funding on the mental health uniform standards of $500,000 in 22-23 and $431,000 in the tails. The language has been altered significantly, as I believe Ms. Sunderman mentioned, but the cost is the same. On line 272 is the governor's item for waiver reimagined, which this bill takes at $1.7 million in 22-23 and a savings of $7.1 million in the tails. On line 282 is the governor's item for disability programs, modifications, rate reform, billing reform, and changing some grants. That has a savings of $16.9 million in 22-23 and $37.4 million in the tails. Next page, please. And at the top, another no-cost item on line 294 is the cost-neutral allocation for housing supports with allowing tribal access. That is a no-cost item, which is in the governor's recs and in this bill. On line 296 is the House's version of the homelessness package. You'll see the next item is blank. That is the governor's items. The House has got a somewhat different allocation and puts out $25 million in each biennium. If you go down to the next item on the governor's side, you'll see that the governor spent about $21.3 million in each biennium. And the House's is a similar idea, but slightly different money in allocation. Going to line 312 is the governor's recommendation, which the House picks up on funding of the SEIU contract. That has a cost of $68.3 million in 22-23 and $105 million in 24-25. At the bottom of that page, line 325 is the governor's recommendation on disability grant reductions. It has a savings of $5.7 million in 22-23 and $1.6 million in the tails. Next page, please. Okay, and we move to line 333, which is the governor's no-cost item on modifications to the opioid emergency council process. This bill picks up the process modifications. They have no change in no cost and no change in the spreadsheet. Line 335 is the governor's recommendation to change customized living units within the rate formula based on acuity. That has a savings of $2.3 million in 22-23 and $7.6 million in the tails. On line 346 is the governor's recommendation on reform of remote service provisions, rate reform. That has a savings of $2.8 million in 22-23 and a savings of $6.9 million in 24-25. Moving to line 352 is House File 944. This is the bill that is trying to create as it's been referred to, the third way. I will note that the number that's in here is a estimated number, which we know to be not correct, and the agency is providing us, we're still waiting for further guidance on this, and I know there is discussion amongst the advocates on the exact nature of the language, so this is a plug number at this point. Line 356 is House File 2084, which has grants for recovery community organizations. This spends $1.1 million in 22-23. And at the bottom of that page on line 360 is House File 722, the culturally and linguistically appropriate service rates in mental health rates. That spends $2.6 million in 22-23 and $1.3 million in the tails. Moving on to the next page, please. And on line 3.71 is House File 2116, the SUD treatment provider paperwork reduction bill, which has a cost of $300,000 in 22-23 and no tails. And on line 377, as part of the whole SUD reform package, again, this is an item where there is a House item here, and if you go down, the next item is the governor's recommendation. The governor's items are zeroed out because there is a somewhat revised plan in the House, which, beginning on line 377, has a savings of $5.4 million in 22-23, and a savings of $17.4 million in the tails. Again, you'll see that on the House side, House columns, the governor's item, the next one is zeroed out. Moving, next page, please. Moving to line 405, I'll just note this is the governor's recommendation for increased funding in school-linked mental health grants. That recommendation for $6 million of new funding was passed in the summer school bill, which I'm sorry I'm not remembering the House file number of right this second, but has moved out and is on, I believe, on the floor at this point. Line 411 is the county and tribal MAT and IMD overpayments issue. The number is the same as the governor's. The only thing I will note is the governor made this payment in fiscal year 21. In this bill, it is done in fiscal year 22. Otherwise, there's no difference to it other than to keep it within the 22-23 biennium and count it within our target. Line 415 is the governor's recommendation, and the House picks it up on the direct care and treatment operating adjustment at DHS. This has a general fund cost of $49.8 million in 22-23 and $57.3 million in 24-25. On line 424, the governor's recommendation for a county share addition to the CABS billing. So for CABS, the counties would now cover 100% of the cost when a patient is no longer medically required to be in that facility. That has a savings of $2.5 million in 22-23 and $2.6 million in the tails. Next page, please. On line 436 is the PCA rate framework. This increases PCA funding by $10.3 million in 22-23. And has tails of $39.4 million. There is still some work being done on the exact language of this bill, of this item. Moving on to line 448, this is House File 41, which is the Essential Workers Emergency Leave Act. It provides, it funds 80 hours, I believe, of emergency leave for frontline workers for as part of the pandemic. The language will be carried in another bill, and I'm not sure, I believe it's going to be in the state government bill or possibly the economic development bill. But as part of the fiscal note on this bill, Department of Human Services has substantial costs because skilled nursing in DCT and nursing home employees in nursing homes that are under the state, part of VBR, there are costs there. And so this allocates $26.5 million in 22-23 to pay those leave costs for the Department of Human Services portion of the fiscal note only. Other parts will be handled by other committees. Line 455 is House File 390, which provides $300,000 in 22-23 and $300,000 in the tails for parent support grants. This is to help parents navigate the child protection system. Line 463 is House File 1159. This is the continuation of the temporary family PCA provider provision that was enacted in special session last year and which ended in December, I believe, and this reinstates it until the end of the, I believe, it goes until the end of fiscal 20, or December 31st, 22, I believe is the ending date it assumes. What I'll note here is that this bill is on the floor, it's on the general register, and it has the same amount in it, although the bill on the floor has $44,000 in 21 and $305,000 in 22. There is some question as to whether that bill will pass on the floor or whether it will pass here. So we have it tracked here, but there may be a change in that. Next page, please. And on line 476 is line 476 is House File 1822. Which is continues some of the temporary changes that have been made during COVID, and it continues those permanently. The cost of $564,000 in 22-23 and $562,000 in 24-25 is related to the change in the housing supports program. There are a couple of other changes in the bill that do not have costs. Line 481 is the House File 287, the Sober Home Oversight Study, that it has a cost of $61,000 in 22-23. And line 486 is part of House File 970. This appears in a couple of places in the spreadsheet. This makes a variety of changes to mental health training, mostly related to cultural competency. The cost at DHS is $222,000 in 22-23 and $194,000 in the tails. There are some costs of these in the health licensing boards and also at the health department that are further down in the spreadsheet. Next page, please. Actually, you're going to go down to page 15, if you can go three more pages. There you go. On line 575 is House File 1600, which is an adult mental health initiative. It has a cost of $1 million in 22-23. And then we are going all the way to page 21, which is the health department's portion of House File 970 that I just mentioned. This has a cost of $7.6 million in 22-23 and $7.6 million in the tails. This is the funding for grants to providers for training and the administration of those grants. And Madam Chair, finally, that is the last items in the spreadsheet that pertain to this committee. And I believe I may have, I'm told that, no, that's fine. I thought I had a message that I had misspoken, but it is on another matter. If there are any questions, Madam Chair.
Mr. Berg, quite impressive on no sleep. Wow. Well, thank you for doing that in record time. I just want to correct one thing. The PCA coverage for parents and spouses ended, I believe, February 7th. So we extended that through the 7th. And so that was the only thing that I wanted to mention. Members, we have like 5 minutes for members' questions on the budget tracking sheet for Mr. Berg. I'm not seeing any questions. Thanks again, Mr. Berg. I hope you'll hang out in case there is a question at the end.
Of course.
Thank you. So we have, I believe we have Commissioner Harpstead with us who would like to comment on our omnibus bill. Commissioner Harpstead, welcome back to the committee.
Good morning, Chair Schultz, members of the committee. Don't know why my video is not working. but thank you for the opportunity to testify today on your omnibus budgeted proposal. Our team is continuing to pore over the finer details. We'll have more feedback as we continue to work together on a budget that meets the needs of Minnesotans and as the process moves into conference committee. To start with, we want to express our sincere appreciation that your omnibus budget package includes so many of the governor's priorities for DHS programs and services. Most notably, the operating adjustment for direct care and treatment. This critical investment is necessary to maintain DHS's capacity to serve its 12,000 direct care clients in a safe, therapeutic setting without reduction in staffing levels. Simplifying the MFIP program so that families can focus on finding employment instead of filling out paperwork, as well as investments to support families on MFIP through additional one-time benefits and ongoing cost of living adjustments. These will have a significant impact on the lives of families in deep poverty. Increased funding for rate increases to personal care assistance, PCA services. This significant investment will fund the bargaining agreement for direct care workers. We also appreciate the proposal to establish long-term investments in a rate framework for PCA services. Together, these investments will directly help many Minnesotans live fuller lives in the community. Funding to hold tribal nations harmless for past agency billing errors and ensuring counties are reimbursed for payments related to substance use disorder services. The Indian Child Welfare Act, ICWA, Training Academy, will support compliance with ICWA and improve outcomes for Indian children and families navigating the child welfare system. This is a key priority for DHS and our tribal partners. Funding and policy changes needed to ensure we're complying with the federal requirements, including the Family First Act, SNAP, North Star Adoption, and Case Management Services. This will ensure that Minnesota does not risk losing federal funding. Efforts to streamline, promote transparency, ensure equitable access to resources, and improve informed choice for people with disabilities and those with mental illnesses through implementation of Waiver Reimagined Phase 2 and Mental Health Uniform Service Standards. And finally, providing financial protections for nursing home residents. We also appreciate you including many other important recommendations from the governor's budget, many of the strategies considered by the Blue Ribbon Commission, as well as several policy proposals brought forward by the department. In addition, we're pleased to see shared priorities for investments to address Minnesota's homelessness crisis, initiatives to strengthen the state's continuum of behavioral health care, and efforts to tackle racial disparities in our human services system. We look forward to working through the details of our different approaches to these and other critically important topics. Thank you for all your good work. We look forward to working together over the coming weeks.
Thank you, Commissioner Harbstadt. And I also want to thank all of your staff at the agency for all the work they've been doing in helping us get our bills ready this session and helping us with fiscal notes and the language technical assistance. Really appreciate it. I know they haven't had much sleep either. So really want to thank them. I've always been impressed with the quality of our state employees at the agencies and our own staff. And this just reaffirms how high quality staff we have and all the work that they're doing. So with that, members, do we have any questions for the commissioner while we have Commissioner Harbstadt here? Everyone is very silent today, mesmerized by our Human Services Omnibus Bill. Okay, thank you, Commissioner Harbstadt. I just want to make a couple announcements before we adjourn. So I will move the DE1 amendment when we do markup. Tomorrow, we're going to continue with our public testimony and take questions from members. If you have questions to the testifiers or specific to the DE1 amendment, we'll take questions. I also want to note that, you know, our strategy was to leverage as much as possible the federal ARP American Rescue Plan money as possible, use state funding where we don't think we'll be able to use federal funding. And then when we get the guidance from the federal government, from the CDC, from the Treasury, from other federal agencies, hopefully we'll either add to our state funding in many of these areas and fund new areas with federal money, even though it's one time. So we look forward to seeing where we can fill holes and add to our initiatives and our priorities with those federal ARP dollars. So tomorrow, again, we'll take public testimony, and then amendments are due by 5 p.m. on Wednesday. So please work on your amendments and get them in as soon as you can so we don't overburden staff. If they can work on ones early, that would be better, but make sure you get those into our committee administrator, Ms. Vang. And then Thursday, we'll do amendments 10:30 to noon. Friday, note that we will start committee at 8:30 in the morning and go until noon for the second day of amendments, and then we'll vote on the final bill as amended with the DE1 and other amendments that we will then vote on Thursday and Friday. Are there any questions from members about the schedule or anything else related to the omnibus process or the budget or the targets? I am not seeing any questions from members. Okay, with that, I'm going to lay over House File 2127, and we'll take up testimony tomorrow on the DE1 amendment. And with that, members, we are adjourned. I will see everyone tomorrow. Thank you for being with us today.